Welcome to the Becoming Me podcast.
The Becoming Me podcast provides a platform for moms to be authentic and truthful about their choices and experiences and celebrates all our unique stories. I have found that connecting and telling our stories allows us to relate with each other and to draw strength from the different experiences. It also reinforces that we're not alone through the highs and the lows of motherhood. So if you're a mom or a mom-to-be, then you're in the right place. So welcome to the Becoming Me podcast. Today we have Lingani here with us. Welcome, Lingani.
Thank you, Varia.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on to talk about your motherhood journey.
It's my first experience.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I'm happy to experience this with you.
I can't wait. I really can't wait to hear more from you. So before we start, we just want to get to know you a little bit better. So you're from Botswana.
Yeah, I am.
Is there something that you can tell us, one great thing about Botswana that we don't know?
So Botswana is the best country in terms of production of diamonds quality. Wow. So actually Botswana produces the best diamond quality in the world, not Africa, in the world.
That's amazing.
But in addition to that, after Russia, it is the second country in the world in terms of the quantity of diamonds that it produces every year.
Wow. So, yeah. I did not know that. That's beautiful. So if you're looking to get engaged, head to Botswana.
Definitely. Definitely.
All right. And how do you say hello in Swana?
You say Dumela.
And how do you respond?
It's more like when you say hi, yes. Right? And then you respond, hi, Lingani.
So if you say...
So in Botswana, I'd say Dumela Bwalia, and you say Dumela Lingani.
Dumela Lingani.
Yeah.
Nice.
You actually did it well.
Nice. I'm heading to Botswana, guys, right now. And I want to find out, what's a series or movie that you're currently enjoying?
I watch Korean movies and series.
Which one are you watching right now?
I'm watching this one. I've forgotten the name. Is it like... A Beautiful Heart or something. But I love this all soppy lovey-dovey.
Guilty pleasure.
I think I always feel like there's not too much, like I don't have to concentrate a lot. Mm-hmm. Like I just have to watch it and get all soppy and lovey. So love I watch it. A lot of Korean dramas.
Oh, that's beautiful. Just to kick us off, I just want to find out, before we get into your motherhood journey, who's in your current family?
Oh, so in my current family, there's me and then there's my husband. Mm-hmm. And we've got three beautiful kids. Mm-hmm. I've got Yaya. Mm-hmm. Yaya is 15.
Yeah.
And then I've got Dona Ontuti. She is 7, turning 8. Mm-hmm. I actually always say 7, turning 8 because at this time of the year, my kids are, they seem like they're a year apart.
Oh, yeah, so, I see.
So my second born is 7 and my youngest is 6.
Wow.
So I always say she's 7 and a half, turning 8, just to make the distinction.
Just to make the distinction. They're not twins.
No. So yeah, I've got two girls, 7 and 6. Yeah.
You know, we want to talk through your motherhood journey. I was hoping you could talk us through your two most recent pregnancies with your girls. They're the more recent pregnancies, so I'm sure you can remember a lot from them. So with your second child, how was the pregnancy like for you?
So with my second child, I got pregnant after marriage, which was something I've always wanted with all my kids. Yeah, I'd hoped I'd get married and then have kids.
Yeah.
So I had my firstborn. So when I had... my second born baby, Ntusi or Duna, it was planned. I always wanted to have the baby after marriage. So I got married in 2013 in October.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, I think 3-4 months later, I felt pregnant, but I was actually checking. And I bought a box of pregnancy tests. So it was, I think that was my most beautiful pregnancy because it was planned for. And I knew what I wanted. I knew, like, I was ready financially. My parents were ready. And my mother-in-law was alive. Mom was there as well. So it was much, it was a lovely pregnancy.
Everything was in place for
Everything
that
Everything was in place. But I mean, I usually get the worst morning sickness. And I did get worse of it. But I think the beauty of it was that I was expecting the journey. And I loved and embraced every minute of it.
And you mentioned that this was planned. So the first one, how does it compare to Yaya's pregnancy?
I had just finished uni. And I was not really in a good space because I was supposed to have graduated in 2006. And I didn't graduate from uni. So I had an additional year. So I ended up graduating on the same year where... I had the baby.
Mm-hmm.
So I was still in uni,
yes,
on my final year. Also stressed because my colleagues had left.
Yeah.
My age mates had left uni, so I couldn't graduate because I had a unit that was so hard. My boyfriend, who happens to be my husband now, he had just started work as well in a different town. So the pregnancy was a bit hard also because I was not able to choose. Well, I chose the hospital that I wanted to deliver in, but chose according to my budget at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So which wasn't what I would have wanted.
Yeah.
And I didn't have much support as well because he was in a different town and I was in the city far away from him. So it was just a bit, it was hard.
Mm.
It was quite hard.
So do you think with the second one, you were thinking through those things actively for things that you'd have wanted in place the first time around?
Actually, with the second pregnancy, I remember I took folic acid before.
Oh, yeah.
Which was kind
of, you were like, it's going to
fancy.
Happen. It's
yeah, gonna happen. I actually got on my pre-pregnancy vitamins.
Yeah.
So I got all the courses and went and got myself checked with the doctor. So it was all planned and it was quite nicer. It was really, it was such a relief because my husband was there.
Mm-hmm.
We were living together. And with the first pregnancy, I actually hid it a little bit because my mom, she's not Christian, but I think she's always wanted to encourage us to have our kids after marriage.
Yeah.
So I kind of hid it for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think for like the first 5 months. Yeah.
That must have been hard.
It was horrific. It was quite hard.
But I'm thinking you're feeling nauseous. You want to, you know, you're going to the bathroom so many times and you're trying to hide and just pretend like you're normal.
It was terrible. Actually, with my first baby, I remember at some point I had to go and ask to get a cannula thinging for the vitamins because I was so dehydrated.
Oh, no.
It was really bad. I was throwing up quite a lot, yeah.
Mm.
But I just still find a way to hide it from my mom.
Yeah. Was it okay when she found out?
Strange enough, yeah. Actually,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Because when she eventually found out, she didn't even ask. She called me and said, so when are you going to register your pregnancy at the hospital? She's like,
mothers know these things.
I've been waiting for you to tell me. So
they do know these things. So you were just telling us about your second pregnancy and you brought us up until 3 months and you found out that you're pregnant. Is it 3 months after you started trying?
No, actually, 3 months after I got married. But with my second pregnancy, it's quite strange. I have a story behind it.
Yeah,
so my daughter is like, we call her the miracle baby.
Uh-huh.
Because what happened is because I was so following up on the pregnancy, I got to know quite sooner that I was pregnant. But I think we didn't calculate it well with the doctor because I knew I was pregnant very quickly, but I didn't know it was quick.
You didn't know when it had happened?
No, I didn't know because when I went to see the doctor and they calculated, you know how they calculate your fertilization
date,
so they start from the last time you had your period.
Yes.
But in actual fact, I think when we went there and she measured the baby and then there was a little dot.
Yes.
And then we calculated from the pregnancy. And then I remember she said, so your pregnancy must be 6 weeks now.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no heartbeat or any sign.
Oh, no.
It was quite a traumatic one because I remember when I went and I was so excited with my husband that we had the baby and the one we planned for.
Mm-hmm.
So I get there and she does her test and I could see her go white.
Yes.
And I'm wondering what's happening because I was lying back and she's doing the scan. So I quickly want to stand up. She's like, no, just lie down and calm down. I'm like, no, something is wrong. What's wrong? And then she says, let's just finish, dress up.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew.
You knew that there was a problem.
Sit down and I'm going to tell you. And then she says to me, so have you ever heard of a blighted ovum? I'll never forget that day.
Wow.
And the words I still remember because she said, I'm sorry, this is not a baby. It's a blighted ovum. I'm not sure how the blighted ovum happens, but apparently once it's there, it's not a baby. It's not going to grow into anything. I mean, it's a fertilized egg, but it doesn't grow to be a baby. So
that's
So then she said to me, I would want to know if you're okay that we get rid of it now.
Yeah.
Just to avoid further trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the worst case scenario, you could choose to just let it go naturally.
On its own.
And I looked at my husband, and funny, I've always been the one with more faith and who goes to church and believes, but my husband usually just believes in the universe. I looked at him and he's like, no, we'll do it naturally. Yeah. I'm like, are you sure? What of the trauma? Because the doctor also said, you know, it might just pass on one day.
Exactly. Yeah. Just to wait and see when it happens on its own.
I cried so much that day. I cried so much. I cried so much. And I called my mom as well. You know, it was that pregnancy that we've waited for. Yes. And I had just gotten married. And, you know, so I called my mom and she's like, she used to be a nurse back then. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know what? It's always going to be worth it just to let God do his work. Just let it be. If it passes naturally, we'll be there. So we'll try to keep you amongst people so that it doesn't happen on your own.
Yeah, just to have that support.
Yeah. So I waited the first month, second month. I didn't go to see that talk.
Wasn't that really hard? Just it waiting, was. Thinking it's going to happen anytime.
Actually, it gave me a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. It gave me a lot of anxiety. I kept waiting. Mm. And I know I talked about it a lot. Like, okay, that's just going to. So I would, you know, like the first months, you'd have those little cramps from implantation.
Yes.
But because my doctor had said I'm past the implantation stage.
Yes.
So I'd get this little cramp.
And you think, this is it.
So one morning I woke up and I'm sporting. TMI, but
No, that's fine.
So I woke up in the morning and I've got a little sport and I'm like, Papa!
Oh, no.
What's going to happen? So he drove me to the hospital really quickly. We get there. She's like, no.
Everything's still fine.
Everything is, but this is with a different doctor.
Yes.
And then she says, no, you would likely sport. Do you want to get the scan done? I said, no.
You said no.
I think I just...
You didn't want to put yourself through that again.
And we didn't have the scan done. Mm-hmm. So we had our first scan at 5 months, which was quite strange.
So 5 months and... Oh, yeah. My word.
And still nothing had happened.
Wow.
So only to realize that it was because I was tracking that pregnancy, like I was testing every other day.
Yeah.
So when implantation happened, I quickly managed to see that I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And also because I got very intense morning sickness.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had, what's that hormone that you pick in the pregnancy test?
It's not oxytocin, is it? Oxytocin?
I'm not sure. But anyway, that hormone that you pick from the pregnancy test, apparently is the one that also makes you have the morning sickness and whatever.
Yes.
So because mine was quite severe,
mm-hmm.
I was able to pick the pregnancy really quickly.
Yes.
So at 5 months, we realized, so because I went to see the doctor and he's like, this is a baby. And he's just like, I can tell, you know, so, I can see the heartbeat from my eyes. Goodness. So he just quickly did the scan and I still remember the heartbeat that day. Oh my God. I think that's why I always cherish that pregnancy because it had its huge ups and downs, but somehow it was just a miracle.
So throughout, like up until 5 months is when you find out that everything is okay. Were you still holding out hope and thinking it might be okay, or you were just ready? You were decided that it's not a pregnancy. I'm just going to wait for it to go away.
I have issues of being a bit of an overthinker.
Mm-hmm.
So I read a lot and did a lot of Google.
Mm-hmm.
But my husband was just shame. He was so certain. Like he would be like, that's a baby.
Oh,
that's my baby girl. And I know it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And interestingly, it was a girl. And we never got to check the sex of the baby, by the way. But he was sure.
He was sure.
And I think he gave me a lot of hope because on many occasions where I thought, you know, like anything that I felt, like even if I felt a little bit of anything and I'm bolting out ready to go see.
Yes.
Because I'm like, sure no. It's going to,
calm down. Yeah.
It was testing, it was really hard. Yeah, it was quite hard.
No, that must have been challenging.
It was.
So you had Yaya then, and then now you're having your pregnancy. You're sure now that you're going to be a mom. What emotions are you going through now where you're excited, you're ready? Because I'd imagine in the beginning you weren't even preparing anything because you didn't know what was going to happen. So when do you start getting comfortable and preparing for the baby?
I started at the 5 months mark.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember by 6 months, my child literally had everything, like everything. I was so excited about her. And also I think the blessing of knowing that God had kept her for us, you know.
Mm.
So we really celebrated Donna. She was like one of the most celebrated babies amongst all three babies that we have.
Looking at the experience that you went through.
I think that we wholly appreciated the fact that she was there.
How was labor for her, like for that pregnancy? Was it easy for you?
What is labor?
Listen to her.
What is labor?
Well, in my case, yeah. I'll just quickly touch on my labor with Yaya.
Yes, definitely.
So with my first baby, I think there was just too much trauma and uncertainties and being at school. Because I remember I felt my labor pains when I was in uni and I had driven myself.
Wow.
So I had to drive myself home and my dad was in the States on a trip. So I was home alone.
No.
Called my aunt. Because of finances, I decided I'm going to give birth in a private hospital, which was outside the city. So it was cheaper.
Yes.
So my aunt drove me there. The labor pains were bad. I get them. They're like 1 centimeter dilated. I'm like, what?
Only with all this pain?
And this pain was horrific. And this is like 15 years ago, by the way.
Yeah.
So the hospital had this little thingy, like it's stairs that they had built.
And this is a hospital in Botswana, is it?
Yeah, in Botswana. So they have the stairs where they like, so when the labor pains start, you just, when they stop, you walk up the stairs and walk down. So this is just to activate labor. Yes. So I was in labor and I was 24 by then. So I was in labor from today at nine in the morning.
Yeah.
So I was in labor through the night and my husband was not even there because he was in a different town.
Oh my word.
So he was driving through. So I was in labor through the night until the following day. And then I was only 2 centimeters dilated the following day. And I'm still in labor. I'm tired. I'm not eating. So they induced me. Worst pain ever. I feel
it
like
is painful.
Being induced is like the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And still nothing until 7 p.m. And by 7 p.m., I think I was just flat out.
Yeah.
So I had so many terms, fetus in distress, hypertension, whatever, preeclampsia, so many things.
And so I was rushed out. Just coming through and you just,
yeah,
you couldn't
and I
keep
was
track.
Rushed to theater and my husband was, well, he was my boyfriend then. He was on his way, but my aunt was there. So I ended up having a C-section, which wasn't planned for. So I think I had to mention that one because when it came to my second baby, I was very clear to my doctor, I'm not doing this again. Like, I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Because they said the baby was in distress and a lot of things. But also what they said was that my bones couldn't, pelvic bones were not able to open up enough. But my baby was quite tiny because I remember he was 2.6, which is quite small.
Yeah.
So if your bones cannot accommodate a 2.6 kgs baby, what are the chances that if this one is? Yeah. So when I started celebrating my second born's pregnancy, I said to my doctor, can you guarantee me that I will have a natural birth? Because she asked, are you going to have a natural birth? I'm like, if you can guarantee me, she's like, I'm not going to do that. And I said, then I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was very, so
you were adamant you didn't want to go through the same experience.
So on the second baby, I didn't, because I felt like the worst case is going through both. So I can't.
So you decided it was better to just go with an elective C-section.
Next two babies, it was elective.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to do it again.
I think the trauma must have stayed with you. And rather than going through and just, you know, seeing what happens, it was better for your mental health just to go with it and make sure you knew what was happening. And especially because you wanted a beautiful experience all the way through the second time around.
Yeah.
So that went really well, the C-section?
It did. Yeah. I got to choose my baby's birthday. And I remember because we didn't have a name. Yeah. So when I chose the date, so I chose the 6th of October, but this is because the doctor's like, okay, I'll do it after 37 weeks.
Yes.
So how soon? So we chose a date. I'm like, okay, this day. So it happened to be on Monday.
Yeah.
So we called it Monday. So this is
Monday.
No. It's just that a month before,
we
knew she was going to be born on Monday. So we're like, Monday is coming, you know, on the 6th of October.
Her nickname was Monday throughout the pregnancy.
This is like just prior to delivery.
Yeah.
So it was quite nicer and easier. And I think I sort of really appreciated it.
What does her name mean, by the way?
Oh, her name is actually called, it's Ndusi. But more often I hear people here call her Nutushi. Ndusi means a beautiful spirit.
What I want to bring you to now is because you've got such a short gap between your second and your third. And I'm very interested to find out whether that was planned or not.
It was not planned. No, it was not.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
It was not. So I've always known that, I sound really silly, but I've always known that breastfeeding is a form of contraception.
I think a lot of people think that.
So for me, I think with the first baby, mm-hmm. I went through it. So I knew it doesn't mm-hmm. happen like that. So I was breastfeeding mm-hmm. and my daughter was 8 months.
Yeah.
She was 8 months and I had just gone back to work and, you know, I'm happy. And mind you, I have my firstborn is a boy.
Yes.
And there was this huge gap, like how many years? 8 years gap.
Yeah.
And then I get this blessing that I didn't expect I'd get. So I'm so excited and I'm back to work and showing off. And meanwhile, I'm also excited back at home. And I forgot that.
It might happen.
I could
again.
Quickly get another one, and I did. Oh. So when I found out, I was just.
How did you find out that you were pregnant?
My pregnancies, I usually find out really quickly. Mm-hmm. I think because I get this horrific morning sickness. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, when I think of pregnancy for me, what would deter me from having a baby is usually the morning sickness. More than, like, I don't even find C-section as bad as people say it is, you know, because I've got a high pain threshold. Mm-hmm. But I think with the morning sickness, there's nothing I can do.
You can't stop it.
Oh my God. Like, I throw up literally every day for a very long time and I can't get to eat anything and I get sick. I lose a lot of weight.
Oh no.
And then I've got... So with this one, I found out, something happened. So when my daughter was, I think, 6 months.
Yeah.
Then I woke up one morning, I've got abdominal pain.
Yeah.
This is the second one, this year, when she was 6 months old. Abdominal pain, go to the hospital quickly. Appendicitis, hospital, and I had to have surgery. So because I had had surgery and it was laparoscopic, I still had those pains in my tummy. And I think I just didn't get fully myself.
Mm-hmm.
So a month and a half later, she was 8 months and I was having those pains and whatever.
These lingering pains.
Yeah.
And you're thinking,
and then I'd have nausea as well. So I'm like.
Is this a surgery?
Like the appendix and the appendicitis. And I still didn't have my period. So I'm like, okay, you know.
What's going on here?
But I didn't even think much of it. But I think by the 1 month mark, I'm like, yep.
This is it.
So I remember when I told my husband, he was like, oh my God, what are we going to do?
He was in shock.
We didn't tell people for a little bit.
I think. You were like, we're just going to stick with this for a while.
And also, I was still trying to, mind you, I hadn't, for me, in practical terms, that was my first baby. Mm-hmm. Because with the first one, mom, like I was still doing uni. Like I said, I didn't get to finish the story, but I was still in uni.
Yeah.
So I had the baby. Mom came, helped. I went back to the village, stayed for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And then went back to the city.
Yeah.
And mom took the baby. And I remember by 3 months, I was slim, back to my normal self, back in uni and finishing up. And so there were no dramas at all.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I didn't get to become a mom.
Yeah.
Because mom was there, you know, and then she had people to help as well. Yeah. You know, she had my grandmother and then she had a nanny at the house. So when I had this one, it was a new experience for me because I was living in my own house. Mom came to help with my mom-in-law and then they left. So they left me with the baby.
Yes. I'll just stop you there and just take you back a little bit before you continue. Having been away from your firstborn and then mom taking care of him, did that affect your bonding with him at all?
Not really, because I came home quite often.
Yep.
He lived with mom, but I came home quite often. Okay. And also, I had him in February of 2007 and then went and did some stuff in uni, I think, for like 5-6 months.
Okay.
And then he came back and I permanently lived with him. But mom was still always there. Yes. Like, I mean, I slept with him, but any slight of discomfort, mom would just pick him up. And,
yeah.
So I shared it with my mom until he was a year.
Yes. So he felt like the second time, I'm sure must have not felt like that because
Like I was all on my own. Well, not quickly.
Not entirely, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I was all on my own after 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the baby and me and my hubby in our beds. Mm-hmm. And that's, yeah. Hi. So it was different. So I was just starting to adjust to the experience of having my own baby.
Yes.
With my own rules.
Yes.
Because with Yaya, mom made most of the decisions. I mean, it was her house and she was the mom.
Yes.
And she kept saying, you are my child, you know, I'll teach you how to...
to parent. Yeah. Yes.
So with this one, it was my rules, my house, my decisions and everything. Mm-hmm. So I was still trying to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
And then bam, there's Gwendo.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's coming, mm-hmm. whether you like it or not.
So yeah, it was quite hard.
How was pregnancy like with this one?
Same. I had traumatic morning sickness and it's usually the first 4 months.
Yeah.
So after 4 months, I can start to enjoy pregnancy.
Yeah.
But I think what was mostly hard was taking care of myself.
Yes.
During those times, especially when I was really sick.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with Ndusi is that she's got this huge bond with Daddy.
Yeah.
But this is because Daddy just stepped in
mm-hmm.
immediately to try and assist.
Yes.
So she's inseparable with her dad. And I think this is because of how things were.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to try and take care of myself, Daddy just took her over and compensated and gave mommy and daddy love. So
that must have been really good for you, just having that support and being able to hand her over so you could take care of yourself through that pregnancy.
I mean, it was,
mm-hmm.
but I think as a mom,
mm-hmm.
because remember she was 8 months old.
8 months old, yeah.
So that's like in her 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th month,
mm-hmm.
when she's starting to discover herself and she's learning a lot of things. And mom is not available because mom is either dehydrated all the time, dragging her feet, throwing up, sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt really bad. I think it contributed to my emotional state of mind after that.
Yeah.
Because I suffered a lot of emotional distress.
Yeah.
But I think it's because of I kept beating myself about it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not even there for my baby. Yeah. I'm not doing enough as a mom, you know?
Is there anything that you did just to help you through that process? Because that must have been hard, those emotions of feeling like you could be doing more, but you're not and you can't. Did you get any help or anything like that?
I didn't. Mm-hmm. I think back then, you know, which is quite strange because it was in 2014, 15.
Yeah.
So you'd think, you know, there's enough information about mental health and stuff, but I don't think I had enough knowledge about mental health. I didn't even understand how I felt and the things that I felt.
Mm-hmm.
So I started having a couple of signs, but I still didn't know what it was, you know.
Would you be able to talk us through what are some of those signs that you felt that led you to believe that you weren't coping quite well?
The first thing that happened a lot was that I became very obsessive about certain things,
mm-hmm.
but in my mind,
mm-hmm.
like my daughter would come to me to see, you know, she was trying to learn how to walk or crawl. So she would come to me to get her to help her with something. I'd be like, no, go to your dad, you know, and I'll just get her out and give her to her dad and close the door because I wanted to sleep and I was tired. So if that incident happens the following day at work or wherever, I keep obsessing about it. I'm like, oh my God, I couldn't even pick up my daughter.
Yeah.
So I would obsess about it all day to a point that by the end of the night, I can't even sleep and I'm still thinking about the same thing. So like every incident, I'll keep obsessing.
And I'm sure that compounded because
and
it's
like compounded so much to a point that by the time my daughter was born, I was having full-blown panic attacks.
Mm-hmm.
I still didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
And I thought I had a heart problem.
Oh, no. Did anybody around you notice that there was something different about you from the mental health side of things?
I think my husband noticed, but he thought there were baby blues.
Mm-hmm.
I think he thought it's just that I'm too stressed because he kept saying, I think he thought it was something we could sort out by him assuring me.
Yeah.
We're going to be fine, babe. We're okay. You're doing good.
Yeah.
You know, it happens.
Yeah.
We didn't plan for this, but that was, it was lovely, but it wasn't enough.
Yeah, it wasn't enough. Yeah, it was, there was more happening than just those surface feelings that you have. And looking back now, when you're reflecting and thinking back, was there something that would have been helpful that people would have done to help you out back then?
That's the thing. I had people, but I think people just didn't know what I was going through.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know how to articulate whatever mm-hmm. it is I was going through. Mm-hmm. So I only started to notice all of this clearly after I had my baby. Mm-hmm. Because now I had my baby and mm-hmm. Ndusi is like a year and a couple of months. Yep. And then I've got Gwendo and my daughter was a crier.
Yeah.
Oh, my word, Bolia.
Oh, no.
Oh, my word. She would cry so much to a point where I'll just hold up my hands, yeah. holding her like that off my body, just so she can cry away from me.
Wow.
She cried so bad. Oh, my God.
On top of struggling with the mental health well-being through the pregnancy,
yes.
you've got your little girl there, and then now your baby is not an easy baby.
And the painful part of it is mm-hmm. I still didn't know that I had depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. I still didn't know.
Mm.
So I had the baby. And then I've been to ER like 5 times with her.
Yeah.
This is because like I would look at her and I think she stopped breathing.
Oh, so you were just
I was
really anxious around her.
Extremely anxious. But this time my mom-in-law had passed on, so she was not there.
Yeah.
And then I'd also gone through a lot anyway prior to those years. A lot of things happened because my mom-in-law passed away when I was pregnant.
Yeah.
Which I think compounded the whole. My aunt passed away as well, the one who was there with the first baby.
Yeah.
So it was just a lot of things
that you needed to process.
I was going through too much. So I started to be very anxious around the baby and a lot of things like snap out of my sleep and think. Because, you know, I've seen a lot of posts that say, how many times, like, you know, there's mm-hmm. funny videos about mm-hmm. a mom who's trying to check if the baby's breathing.
Yes.
And I know it's a bit normal, but I know mine was quite abnormal.
Yeah. yeah.
Because I would just scream and pick it up and scream like, yeah, she's not breathing. So it just compounded and compounded because it was left untreated for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And then I only got to really know what was happening. But this is after I went through so many doctors. And they kept saying, because I think the thing for me is the doctors would say, you're anxious.
Yes.
And depressed.
Yeah.
But for me, when they said that, I thought it's something you can snap out of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this wide feeling where people make it think, they make you think that anxiety is, you're not feeling it. Like I'd come in and say, my heart is stopping.
Yeah.
My heart is not beating well. Yeah. It's skipping beats. And then he'd be like, yeah, it's just anxiety.
Mm.
But I'm like, no, I feel it.
Yes.
So I think I lacked that person who could explain to me that, yes, you are feeling it because, yes, it's happening.
Yes.
But it's because your body is on overdrive.
Yes.
It's because your body is tired.
Mm-hmm.
So I never got to sit down and accept the feelings. So each time they came, I panicked with them. So that's the other thing about anxiety. Mm-hmm. The more you panic, the more anxious you become.
Yeah. So, I just want to ask, in the Australian healthcare system, when you're having your appointments for pregnancy, they go through a bit of a mental health check where they check whether you're coping well. Is there anything like that back in Botswana where they sort of do an assessment on you when you're pregnant to check whether you're coping well mentally?
No, but I think they don't. Like, I think they don't try to discover even the slightest bit of mental health issues because they'll say, have you ever thought of hurting your baby?
Mm.
I mean, I hadn't thought of harming my baby, but it does not mean I was not anxious.
Exactly.
So I think I quickly had those, have you thought of harming your baby? I'm like, no. Have you thought of harming yourself? I'm like, no. She's like, okay, cool.
What they were looking at was very limited in what it would be. If they had covered a wider range of mental health assessment or checks, they would have caught that you had a problem that they would have helped you with early on.
Because when I came back a couple of months later, towards a year now, and I'm like, I've been going through depression and anxiety. She's like, what? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think she did feel that she missed on a lot of things.
Yeah.
But I think that's another thing. We still have a bit of a long way to go in Botswana in terms of accepting mental health and knowing that it's not, you're not mad.
Yeah. It's not like you're crazy.
No, and it's not that you're crazy. It's just that, you know, you're exhausted.
Exactly.
Your mind needs to rest. Just like your body can be tired.
Exactly.
Your mind gets tired as well. And if you give it a bit of love and care.
Yes.
Because I think that's the part where I missed it the most.
Mm-hmm.
I failed to know that I got to find out, but that was a bit late. It was a bit
after
late.
After struggling for so long.
Yeah, but also not even because I struggled. I think I got to find out because I gave up.
Yeah.
I went to a lot of doctors. I checked my thyroids.
They were sort of focused more on the physical.
Yeah.
Instead of stopping and actually talking you through so you could really understand that it was a mental health problem that was then impacting on your physical health as well.
Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, eventually, when I couldn't get any help and it still persisted and I felt like it was taking away from my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
Because there are times where I'll just be closing myself in the room with the little baby. Mm-hmm. This is going on. But then I had another baby who was like, you know, a year and some months. So eventually when I tried everything and it wasn't working, so I went on Google.
Yeah.
What is depression? What is anxiety? How do you heal it? I read a lot and obsessed and stressed until one day I found this book.
Mm-hmm.
I'll send it to you one of the times when you... Yeah. Speak to moms and they're struggling with mental health.
Yes. What book is it?
The book is called At Last a Life. Actually, that's what it did for me. At last, I got a life.
Yeah.
It's called At Last a Life.
Mm-hmm.
It's by Paul David. Dealing with mental health, like, rather not getting over, but dealing with it. It teaches you a lot. Sometimes it brings in so many complicated terms of, you know, mindfulness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this one it's a very simplified book. It goes on with people's stories and just says, teaches you how to first, don't fight it, accept it and say, my body is tired. And he says, just like if you are very tired or whatever, and you've got, you know, pain in your leg, unlike mental health, when you have that pain in your leg, you don't go running around trying to find. If you get to see a doctor and you know that you've got this pain, you accept it and you know that it won't heal today.
Mm-hmm.
And then you rest your leg.
Yes.
You rest your leg and maybe get some warm water on times and just, you know, rub it off and, you know, day by day.
Day by day.
And then you give it time.
Yes.
And even on one day where you wake up and it's really sore, you know that the past week it was better.
Yes.
So it will get better.
Yes.
So I think that's the other thing. Yeah. That's the other thing with mental health. You know you're not well.
Mm-hmm.
And this is because your mind is tired.
Yes.
Because you've exerted pressure on it and you've been going through a lot.
Yeah.
So just like your leg, it needs to heal. Mm-hmm. And it won't heal today.
Yeah.
And there are days where you'll feel good because you're giving it time to heal.
Mm-hmm.
And then someday it feels worse than the other. Mm-hmm. But you need to remind yourself.
It will get better.
And it was better yesterday, so it will get better.
Yeah. I just want to hear from you what things worked for you in terms of working through your anxiety and depression at that time. Once you realized and accepted that you had it, what worked for you to work through it? I don't want to say get over it, but work through it.
I can't say I've worked through it because I still have bouts of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty of it is that now I'm more aware. When it starts, sometimes I'm not aware enough to know right away.
Yes.
But sometime in between, I'm like, wait a minute. I've been feeling quite anxious.
Yeah.
My heart has been beating a lot. So then I take time off. Like right now, I'm going on leave for 2 weeks. We're going to Perth. And I know it's because I've been feeling a bit anxious. There's been a lot happening at work and then COVID as well at some point. Mm-hmm. So I know I need to take time off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I need to do things that I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I need to walk by the beach. Mm-hmm. I need to rest.
Yeah.
You know, I need to just lie down on the bed and look at my husband and just smile and just take it in. I battled with a lot of things. I tried a lot of gym.
Mm-hmm.
Like I tried a lot of things for a while. You won't believe if I told you that I battled intense anxiety and depression for at least 2 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Mm. Without any support, without getting any coping mechanisms for yourself.
So even when I did get the coping mechanism like 2 years later, I still tried everything because I still wanted it to stop.
Yes.
So I think that's the other thing, you know, you want it to stop. You want your mind to stop, but you don't realize that the more pressure you put on it to stop,
the worse it gets. Mm.
So I tried a lot of gym, but I was still putting so much pressure on myself. I think I only got better when I started to just let go. I would still feel it. Like I would, because first I was not functional. You know, I would have, like I remember I stayed off work for a month and I was just not functional because I couldn't work through my racing heartbeat. I couldn't work through my thoughts. I had this extreme vertigo. Like I just feel like I'm spinning which was all anxiety. So I just started to learn through that book that I was telling you about. Yeah. I learned to feel it.
Yes.
And just let it be.
Yeah.
Because eventually it would stop. So I just feel the racing and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, let's get
Are you tired?
Yes.
To my mind. Yes. I'll just speak to it and be like, yeah, I understand that you're not feeling good. So I'll let you and you'll be fine, you know, rest a little bit.
Do you think that both as a mom and as a person that is going through a challenging experience with mental health, that you have to be slightly selfish, allow yourself to take care of yourself without feeling like you have to take care of everybody else first?
I don't think that's just me. I think most moms struggle with this. I struggle with this a lot.
Yeah.
I struggle with remembering to put myself first.
Yeah.
It makes me feel quite emotional because I wish the people around us reminded us.
Yeah.
Because usually I would say to my husband, you need to remind me to take care of myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because more often I forget because I'm taking care of all of you. And worse off in a country like Australia, and for me who only came 4 years back, I still struggle because I've always had help.
Yes.
I've always had my mom. I've had my siblings. And also you can easily afford help. You know, you can hire help.
Yes.
Like I could afford to have a nanny and a gardener and a maid.
Yeah.
But I can't even afford any of those here.
No, I think most of us can.
Yeah, I've struggled a lot learning how to be able to balance. And I still struggle. I still struggle to give myself full love on my own. And
I think something that stands out with you is you're very aware and you're very mindful about your mental health or where you're at. And I think that's good because as long as you're aware, you keep trying to find ways in which you can make yourself better, or at least you see those warning flags and you can try and stop or work on them.
I won't even say I'm doing extremely well with that. Not even well, you know, let alone extremely, but I'm a bit aware, which is, I think if you've gone through mental health issues, you remember and you try not to go back there.
Yeah.
Sometimes I find I'm putting myself under so much pressure not to go back, but you know, I don't control
and
my
then you remember mind. Then you remember the more pressure you put on yourself, the worse it gets.
You know, there are times where I was joking with my colleagues at work and I'm like, so we're talking about, you know, it's time to go home.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm just gonna drive my car parking area at home, switch it off. Drop my car seat and take an hour and away from my husband and his kids. So more often when I do that, I quickly realize that I'm getting drained.
Yeah.
I need to take, you know, deliberate action and take deliberate steps just to make sure that I have time to myself. And you know that 1 hour is the most, because half the time I get into my house, I'm not even sure if it's just me or a lot of moms relate. Like my kids, I was like, mom.
I think I've heard that a lot. And my son doesn't talk yet, but for sure I've heard kids just going, mom.
Oh my God. And I've been like, even to my son, I mean, he's 15. And then we're in the kitchen together. He's standing next to me like, mom. Mom, like, God,
give me a break. Just talk.
And meanwhile, I've had a really long day and I've got a lot of habits that even stress me more because I'll be like this in my work stuff.
Your work,
fortunately, I wear casual at work, but I'll be in my work t-shirt.
And at home still doing everything.
Right when I get home, my husband is lying on the bed and resting, probably because they've had something to eat and they've done whatever during the day. But I get there and I just wanted to take over and just in my uniform, I'm standing in the kitchen with an apron. I'm trying to make sure that, you know, there's food for tomorrow. Did you guys clean your bedroom? And meanwhile, he's just like, but I was home all day. I'm like, did they, you know, did you take out the laundry?
That's the
did
mom you? And you just coming out and wanting to make sure everything is perfect. But do you think that we just need to prioritize the important things and sort of be able to let some of those things go, where you're saying, if I'm not organized for 2 days ahead, that's okay. Because then I get that hour to just relax.
I struggle to let go.
Yeah.
Which also works against my mental health, of course. I struggle to let go of some things.
Mm-hmm.
So Yeah, I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And I'm talking to myself as I'm talking to you, because I think it starts early on, before you even have more kids. I think you have these high standards for what you should be doing and how things should be. But I think the more you push yourself, burnout is just around the corner. So it's reminding yourself to slow down. Yeah.
True.
So looking at what we've spoken about, if you could go back and talk to yourself when you were struggling back then, when it was really bad, what words of encouragement would you say to yourself?
I think I've always wanted to say to a younger Lingani, Lingani, you're human. And you cannot be perfect. And take a day at a time. One day at a time. And usually, even if you make mistakes along the way, it'll be okay. You know? Just take it a day at a time. Calm down.
Slow
down a little bit. And just know that it will be fine.
We're speaking about a lot of your experience now, but have you spoken openly to people around you regarding your experience with mental health?
I've spoken to family about it. They kind of understood, but I've quite found that my friends here in Australia seem to really understand a lot, and they relate. I think people are more open about mental health here because it's not things that we talk about a lot back home openly.
It's unfortunate because I think a lot of people, like you said, you put pressure on your mind, you're definitely going to struggle. And a lot of people are struggling, but it's very difficult to come out in the open and say.
Like, it's not things I've spoken about a lot at home, except with my family. Like, I don't even think my friends know that I've battled and still battle mental health here, because I've been here for 4 years in Australia. But you find that the friends that I have are not like my childhood friends. Yes. They don't fully know me.
Yeah.
But they still quickly relate to my struggles, and they totally understand. So I found it quite easy to just chat to them and be like, you know, I've been battling mentally, and I've actually had friends who were more than happy to, you know, some of my goals drag me out of the house at one times where I felt like I was drowning because they know that I've struggled with my mental health. So they want to play a role in making sure I'm well again.
And how has that impacted you overall?
It's been amazing.
Yeah.
It's been amazing. Like, there are also some things that I've been able to do in Australia compared to back home when I was in uni, because I did my uni 2 years ago. When I was in uni, I saw a psychologist like full time.
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Came to Newman. There was this amazing psychologist. Yeah. But I didn't even see them because things were bad.
Yes.
But I saw them because
I felt they were available as well. You didn't want things to be bad as well.
Yeah.
You didn't want to get there.
Also, they were very available, you know, because I think having, being told even in class, we've got a psychologist, here's their number. If ever you feel like you need to see someone. So I've gotten to see one in the school, and it was free.
Yeah.
And it was amazing.
This is through uni here?
Yeah. It's through uni here.
And do you think that the move migrating from Botswana to Australia has impacted your family overall in a positive way, from a mental, from a well-being, like a mental health well-being point of view?
Mostly.
Yes.
Mostly. But there are still things that still get to me that I don't struggle with at home. Like I said, support.
Yes.
Because support can really affect you mentally a lot, as well as a bit of stress in your marriage, because we don't really get to, I don't remember, I think, in my 4 years, I've probably been with my husband, just the two of us, maybe not more than five times in the 4 years. Yeah. So it also affects me. But generally, yes.
Yeah.
There are a lot of positives that I've had, you know, being able to see someone, or always being able to talk about my mental health problems, being able to relate to other people openly as well. Like, look at me now.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'll do a sit-in and talk about mental health for a channel that I know is going to be put on social media.
Yeah.
So I'm actually comfortable because I've become comfortable.
That's great. Yeah. It shows how far you've come from where you were.
I know I've come far.
Definitely. Yeah. And I can see, even, you know, just looking at you, because people can't see you, but you can see that, you know, you've really, really changed and grown from where you were. Because I can see that wise eye as you reflect on the experiences that you've had. And yeah, you're right. I was looking at it more so in terms of the support system that is over here as compared to over in Botswana, and how that would have improved the well-being of your family. Because if you're doing great, or you're doing better, then they're doing better as well. They're happy. Yeah. Mm. Just to bring it to a happier place, now that you've got your kids now, your girls are like 6 and 7, or 7 going on to 8 and 6 going on to 7.
Yeah.
Would you say now that there are any benefits to having them close? Because obviously, you know, what exacerbated your mental health was that gap was so close. And now that they've grown a little bit bigger, would you say there are any benefits now to having them close in age?
I think that's the best thing I've ever done for myself.
Yeah.
You know, if I could, because this time I would be aware.
Yeah.
I'm not having any more kids. Like, I mean, I'm 39, so no.
You never
but know. If I were younger and I could, I would have made sure that all my kids are closer in gap. And this is with full awareness.
Yeah.
First, you need to be aware, because I think for me, I didn't know what to expect and I didn't prepare for it.
Yeah.
But if you're ready for it,
yes,
please do it. Because once your kids start to grow together, you forget it even happened. Like, I think that's the other thing that heals me mentally and emotionally. Like, looking at my girls, they don't struggle, you know. I see them. They're practically twins. They go in the bathroom together, toilet together. They, I think that's the best thing I've done for them. I look at Yaya, I'm like, oh, poor guy.
Poor Yaya.
Because the sisters are like 8-9 years between him and them. And So it's the best thing I've done.
But he's an amazing young man, so he's turned out really good anyway.
He is. Thank you.
And looking at the experience that you've had in the past, how would you say motherhood has shaped who you are today?
Motherhood is growth. Mm-hmm. You know, motherhood always brings this huge growth. Mm-hmm. This, and also motherhood, because I feel like most of the things that I went through, I wouldn't have gone through them if I hadn't been a mother.
Yeah.
This is not to say you don't grow if you're not a mother.
No.
You know, this is not to say. Not. I just need to highlight that one. Yeah. This is personally for me and the experiences that I've gone through. I feel like they've made me a better person. You know, I look back and I realize that I've gone through, after my bouts of anxiety and depression, then I've gone through very difficult circumstances, which, if it was my first time going through mental health, I would not have gotten over
handled
them.
It.
Like, I've gone through my migration journey. It was heavy. I would have just, you know.
Yeah.
But I still kept it solid.
Mm.
And I think this is because my motherhood journey has given me a lot of experiences that I keep drawing back from.
Given you that strength.
You know, more often life is usually a journey, and your experiences, they shape you to be a better person. Because if you draw from what you've experienced and how you dealt with it, you remember. Like, more often now when I get something, I'm like, wait a minute, this is what works. This is what makes it better. So I always somehow seem to make better choices than if I had not been. So I wouldn't trade my experiences for anything.
That's beautiful. That's lovely. And if you could say anything to your three kids that they would listen to for what you hope for them in the future, what would it be?
Oh, my babies. Mommy loves you absolutely so much. You know, mommy wants the best for you. And sometimes mommy can be a bit cranky, but this is only because mommy gets tired. But besides everything, their wrongs, their stresses that they bring me, their frustrations, I would not give them up for anything in the world. Like, I would keep doing it again and loving them despite all of it. So I just hope in life they'll just grow to understand that I had my own challenges. Still love them, because I know that sometimes when you're at your lowest, especially with depression, sometimes your kids might feel unloved. And, you know, we often think the kids were younger, but most times kids will still remember those experiences and feel neglected in life. And I keep trying to, sometimes I find myself overcompensating because I remember the times where it was darker. So I'm like, you know, I need to bring in so much brightness. And my husband is like, stop, it's too much. They understand, you know, and I hope they keep knowing this.
I'd like to think, and this is just an opinion, but I'd like to think that they've seen you come from that place and develop and grow through to who you are now.
Yeah.
And as much as they can see your low points, they can see the person that you are now. And I'm sure they're proud of how far you've come.
Hopefully. I smile a lot when I look at my son, you know, when you're saying he's come up well. Look at him.
He has.
He knows mommy is tired. He knows mommy is a bit stressed. Mm-hmm. Like I see him try to brighten me up. Yeah. I see him try to, sorry, Shepherd, but he buys the best presents for me.
There you go.
The best presents. Actually, he even bits his dad. Can you imagine?
Honestly.
Like he knows me so well and tries to.
Yeah, he's a gentleman. He is a good
kid. So he really tries to fit in and, you know.
Yeah.
So it's beautiful because I think, just like you said, I think he knows and he understands. So, which makes me feel like my girls will also understand.
I like to believe that they will.
Then they'll be kinder to me.
They'll be kinder to you. And also, I think they will learn from your experience and they'll be able to take that with them when eventually they maybe become moms in the future too. Hmm. And lastly, is there any advice you can give to moms out there?
We put moms under so much pressure to be perfect.
Yes.
And we box them into societal norms and expectations. Like, this is how it should be. This is, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I need to remind moms to be gentler and kinder to themselves.
Yes.
No one can ever understand your journey better than you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is me telling you my journey of my three kids. And it doesn't seem like it was a smooth one, you know. But you can't tell by just looking at me.
No.
And also you can't say you know what I went through. Even if I've told you now, you've heard what I told you.
It's just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, but you don't know. So I think we need to be kinder to ourselves because only we know what we're going through. And we shouldn't be put under too much pressure, you know. Motherhood is hard as it is without the pressure. So when you pile on the pressure, it's even more traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
So also to other people out there, let's be kinder to moms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's just be kinder to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot as is.
Mm. Awesome. It's been so, so beautiful hearing your journey. And I think, you know, you're speaking about something that a lot of people go through, but it's not openly discussed. And I think a lot of moms, a lot of people listening in, they'll be able to learn and relate to a lot of things. And I think they'll be better for it. So thank you so much.
Yeah,
it's been beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Valia.
So to end the podcast today, we asked Lingani's kids what they love the most about her.
My name is Nijajo Yaya Stephen. One thing I love about mom is that she is so open and such a great mom that I can tell her anything. What I mean by that is that I was kind of scared because I was going to tell her I want to be a football player when I grow up. And that's not really the best career because there's a slim chance I'm getting in. But I told her and then she was just supportive and she was like, yeah, you can do anything. You just got to put your mind to it. But from now on, we got to focus and do it. And yeah, also what I mean by that is that like anything I can tell her, let's say something happened at school that I did a bad thing, I'm open, come tell her, and she can understand and help me move forward.
Dutsi Akujala Steven. She helps me when I need it most. I was just playing Lego and I couldn't get the part off, and then she helped me get it off. She helps me cut my thing of my bread when I'm making a heart sandwich.
Kundu Akujala Steven.
But she helps us do our homework. She's a good cook.
She's a good cook. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Becoming Me podcast. I've been your host, Walia. Look out for a new episode every Monday where we talk to another mom regarding their motherhood journey. Please share the podcast, and if you'd like to chat on anything regarding motherhood, please reach out. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.